The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, everyone. Really glad to see so many people here. I feel so good. Glad you chose this this evening. So there's a lot to absorb in Fusatsu, which is a renewal of vows ceremony. It goes back to the time of the Buddha, when mostly the monastic community would get together on each full moon and say how they sort of, slid from their vows, if you will, or broke the Vinaya, the rules for living together, or created some harm. And everyone would share that together. They would just say it together. And so we do this in such a way together where we reflect on our actions of body, mouth, and thought, and we atone and see the non-separation between our actions and what has happened and what is happening. And so it's a renewal. It's to make fresh. And the beginning of the new year is a time that we see as being fresh. Somehow the word fresh really has, it's like it is what it is. It is fresh. Like when you say the word fresh, there's a freshness to it. So we're making fresh. And that's what we can do again and again. If we go off, we can just make fresh. We can renew the direction we want to go in. So it's like a new day, but it's larger. In a sense, it must reflect our sense that we need this, that on a regular basis, we do need the opportunity to begin again, begin fresh with a renewed purpose, a new direction, realign our compass. We all get lost. And so to realign our compass. The Buddha realized that the absolute nature of all things, human and non-human, is without any fixed characteristic. And that because of our human consciousness, because we think, because we have intention, because we make decisions, because we perceive good and bad, we perceive pain and pleasure, that everything we do has an effect that usually brings about an effect of pain or pleasure for the most part. So everything that we do, the Buddha realized, has a moral quotient for ourselves and for others. He said to begin practicing means that we have to begin by ceasing from evil or from harming. To begin practicing, we have to begin by ceasing from harming. We have to begin to see and to practice and to let go of the inner and outer actions that create harm, obstructions, call it impediments, obstacles. And so we have to really pay attention ceaselessly. It's a ceaseless practice, right? There's no like off ramp, if you will. You know, once you start, it's hard to turn around and go back because we know something. So we really pay attention keenly, ceaselessly. So every precept begins with, don't do this. Don't kill. Do not kill. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't speak of others' errors and faults. Don't be false and tell lies. Cease from harm. Cease from evil. Stop creating obstructions. And then it gives us the affirming life tendencies. Affirm life. Don't harm it. Be giving. Don't steal. Unless it's to save a life. In the Mahayana perspective, tell a lie if that's the only intent is to save a life. Don't steal unless it's to save a life or many lives. So they're not so black and white from a Mahayana perspective. And so Buddha most often spoke in terms of impediments on the spiritual journey. You know, we hear that a lot, obstructions, impediments, what's in the way, what's hindering. And if it's an impediment, it's an impediment in just about anything. How else can we expect to live in a way that's hindering, unhindering, unless we stop hindering? How can we hope to live unobstructively if we don't cease creating obstructions? So when we make a vow, in order to do that, and in order to practice and fulfill a vow, a direction, a vow is a bundle of energy that's moving us in a certain direction. In order to do that, we have to be intimately aware of how we undermine a vow as well. To not harm, to practice and actualize good, to not be greedy or ignorant, we have to see the other side as well. It takes a lot of honesty, eh? You know, I'd rather somebody say, I'm greedy. that's good. And they could say it, I'm greedy, because then you could do something. You know, we have to be able to accept that. It's one reality. It's just one reality. So to clearly see how and refeel the ways we are deluded, which means ignorance or not seeing in accord, in harmony with how things truly are. The precepts are at the same time completely understanding and embracing of our capacity to create harm, to create evil, and simultaneously aiming high. As Dogen said, to be free of that which obstructs and creates stress or suffering. So, to practice a vow, we have to know within ourselves our own ways, how we do it, how we undermine the very vow that we bind ourselves to, that we want to make. It's interesting how that works together. It makes it stronger to know that, for me at least. We have to become transparent to ourselves. Yeah. To be fearless, to see, accept, and practice everything that's undignified, messy, that is petty, that is hateful, that is jealous. We have to practice it. As my teacher, Shugen Roshi, loves to say, we have to shift from being the last one to know, the last one to find out, to being the first. It's why we practice the way wholeheartedly. And also to learn the lightness of being. At the same time, we are responsible. We don't let it define us. What happens if we discover that every attachment is liberating when it's released? That every form of ignorance is illuminating when it's seen through. All evil or harmful karma ever created by me, it's pretty direct, not somebody else, by me, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and delusion or ignorance. And that karma is born of our body, mouth, and thought. Now I am at one. I atone. I'm at one. I'm not separate at all from any of it. Yes, this happened. I'm not separate from it. I'm at one with it. And we have to do this. It's not just once, but a lot. A lot. We have to repeat it. Turning towards that which before we would have turned away from. And so many of us do that, right? We begin to say how our binding karma is, in a very real way, actually how it's assisting us. That's what we begin to see. It has been extremely instrumental to bringing us to this place. To turn towards the truth, and most importantly, to hold ourselves to it. And this is practice, and we can find an immeasurable amount of liberation right there on the spot. Now, having said all of that, at the same time, on this threshold of this new year, let's also reflect on good karma. On good karma. We have to bring out the binding. We have to bring out the obstacles, the obstructive, because that's what creates us to freeze and reify and frame and hold. But it's really important that we not ignore the good and how we are flowing on and on. Because that too has been instrumental, hasn't it, in bringing us to this place. All the good karma ever created by you, by me. To appreciate the life that we have. Because when we appreciate it, we'll take care of it. We see what we have. There's a line in the Mountains and Rivers Sutra that Dogen says, these mountains and rivers belong to those who love them. And when we love something, we'll take care of it. In the fascicle, the wholehearted way, Dogen's fascicle, Bendoa, Akamura Sensei goes through various characters of the meaning that Dogen might have used and meant in his teaching on the title Bendoa, which I thought would be good to hear. So one translation being, put all of our energy into practice, or to practice the way wholeheartedly. That's what Bendoa means. Put all of our energy into practicing our life. Or practice the way wholeheartedly. Fusatsu means continuous good practice. That's how it's translated. Fusatsu, continuous good practice. He says, he goes on to say, we should understand what is the way. The Buddha way we vowed to attain. The Buddha way is unattainable. What is the way? And he says the character do in Japanese is also an abbreviation for the Buddha Way, or the truth to which Buddha awakened. It also means the way Buddha walked. It's Tao in Chinese. And part of the Chinese kanji character means a part, I love this, a part of our body above the neck, as in the face or the head. So another part includes this face and facing and walking, so that we walk in the direction we face. It really struck me. If we want to go somewhere, we have to take a path that leads us to our destination. We find a method to take us there. So he says this is the original meaning of the character Tao, the Tao. Other Taoists said it cannot be named or defined. The way is the naturalness of the whole universe without any person made distinctions or discriminations, facing what's natural in harmony. And then another translation of the way used in China and Japan was marga, the way from delusion to enlightenment, marga. So to follow the way that Buddhas and ancestors walked. They walked the same way, yet each walk was unique. Look at Kinhin. We walk the same way, one foot in front of the other, but it's all unique. Everyone has to put their walking together in your way. And each person has a different way, a different style, a different kind of expression in their activities, different characteristics. That's really important. There is a way, and each of us need to find our way of walking. What is true? What is in harmony? It's just like you get instructions for beginning instructions in meditation. Inhale as you connect with your breath. Inhale one, exhale two. But that's it. And so we each then have this body that we have to like find our way to do that. Connect with our breath. Dogen used the expression Gyoji Dokan. Gyoji, which ceaseless practice, means practice or protection of practice. And Do is the way, and Kan means circle. So he spoke of practice as a circle of the way. We practice circularly, not linearly, circularly. We practice, we realize something, we actualize that, manifest that, actualize that, and manifest it. And that's circular. We practice, realize, actualize, manifest. And that happens all the time as you're going about your life and you're practicing little by little. So it's helpful to understand the way is simply not one direction from a starting point to a goal. Rather, it's a circle. We just practice. It's circular. We ceaselessly practice and protect the way that has no beginning and no end, such as a circle. Where? Where did you start? Where did you end? That's practice. Circle of the way. We arouse the Bodhi mind, the aspiration to awaken. Moment to moment, we practice moment to moment, engaging what arises. We become aware of karma and how it's created by this specific body, mouth, and thought, and we guide and protect the precepts, our alignment with being in harmony with how things are. And we continue to do this ceaselessly. And our practice is perfect in each moment, and we have a direction towards Buddha. It's aiming high. I hope you get there. I'm trying my best too. We're fledgling bodhisattvas on that path. For how long? I don't know. How long have you been on this circular? How many kalpas have you been practicing to arrive at right here, right now? Each moment is perfect. Yet within this perfect moment, we have a direction, the bodhisattva vows. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Or you can say, however innumerable beings are, I vow to save them. Desires, meaning cravings. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. However inexhaustible my ignorance or delusions, I vow to put an end to them. So we'd be around for a while. We'll be circling for a while. The dharmas are boundless. However immeasurable the dharma teachings, I vow to master them. I will just keep practicing the teachings. I vow to do that. The Buddha way is unattainable. Endless is the Buddha way. I vow to attain it. I vow to follow it. The four bodhisattva vows are our direction within our moment-to-moment practice, and yet each moment is perfect. Since our delusion is inexhaustible, at no time can we eliminate all our delusions. Still, we try moment to moment, right? They're inexhaustible, but we try. This trying itself is a manifestation of the Buddha way. Just trying to come out of that ignorance, that's a manifestation of the Buddha way right there. Perfect. Is that a mind bender or what? It takes a while to understand. We can think we're wrong, bad, ashamed for not knowing. I remember my own practice and hear this from students. They'd come in and I would do it myself, and I would say all this stuff I'm seeing that's kind of like deluded, and my teacher would go like, marvelous, wondrous that you see that. And I would be like, what? Like, that's awful stuff. And they're like, but you're seeing stuff. You're seeing what's happening. We do not see it even as we walk on it. The very inclusive awareness happening of delusive thinking, where we're seeing the office and practicing the stopping over and over, trying to break free of conditioned proliferation of mostly painful thoughts and actions. Trying in itself is the manifestation of the Buddha way. There's awareness. It's so beautiful, and at the same time, we think we're missing something. That's what I felt like when he went like, marvelous. I was like, but I'm trying to tell you I'm missing it. And he's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. He didn't say that. He left that more open. He's just looking at me like a Buddha. Like, are you, get it? That's the obstruction, that we don't see it. So, we can be totally at one and wholeheartedly accepting our discomfort or our inconvenience. And it's not me. It doesn't define me. And I spoke in one talk of a quote from Pema Chodron I love, where she says, when you hear some teaching that rings true to you, and you feel some trust in practicing the way, and some trust in it being a worthwhile way to live, then you're in for a lot of inconvenience. And Pema heard one of Trungpa's students give a talk, and he began by saying, if you're interested in these teachings, then you have to accept the fact that you're never going to get it all together. I remember my stomach relaxed when I heard that. In one part, I was like, oh, really? Like, I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing, was like getting it all together. What would that even look like? We have this idea of perfection. I can honestly say from here, I'm never going to get it all together. Never going to get all the loose ends tied up. We're always going to be in a position where we don't know. We're always in a position where something more can happen now that we don't know. Now is very uncertain. We don't know. And that's why it's so powerful, if we can be in it. Pema's teacher, Trungpa, told her, there are those inconveniences that actually perk you up, keep you awake, present gaps in your cozy, seamless reality of centralizing into yourself. So we atone for it all. We become one with all of that, all of what we are, wholeheartedly, not separate. That's what the Gatha of Atonement speaks to, and how it becomes the energy to take a further step. When I say, yes, that happened, this happened, I can take another step now. I am not separate from that. We can practice further in the direction of Buddha. Our practice is endless. So delusion means our individuality, our limitations as individuals. Also could mean egocentricity. When we cannot see from other people's point of view because it's not our reality, that's delusion. This is because we have karma and are limited as individuals. In each moment, we can only see a very small part of the world, not the whole world. That's why we have troubles and fighting and arguments. The angles we see the world from are different. That's the source of delusion. And Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi is to see that we cannot see the whole world. We are limited. And Buddha realized this. This means we need to hold our viewpoints lightly. And in Zazen, that is just what we can experience directly. A way to let our limited views, our limited mind, and touch the vast, inconceivable mind. And that supreme awareness has always been here. In our practice of Zazen, whether it's counting our breath, open awareness, koan study, when we do it wholeheartedly, we close the gaps. That's what's transmitted through Buddha and ancestors. Wholehearted practice, trying over and over. Arkamora says, our universality and our individuality is completely present in each moment. And as an antidote to our delusions, we're encouraged to practice the paramitas that we studied. The practice of generosity when we get stingy, love and kindness when we're unkind, patience when anger takes over, joyful effort, meditative concentration, and to know the basis of all of this is prajna, emptiness, nowhere to stand, nothing to dwell in. There's not a single thing. Avalokitesvara Bodhisattva clearly saw the emptiness of all the five conditions. That's each one of us. To see it is just the same. Akamura's teacher was Uchiyama Roshi, who said, a bodhisattva is an ordinary person who has a direction towards Buddha. An ordinary person who has a direction towards Buddha. That's a bodhisattva. The direction is the vow to be a Buddha. He says, each action in our day-to-day lives can be a manifestation of the way. We practice because we are already the way. And Dogen Zenji says that in the first sentence of Fukan Zazenji. The way is perfect and universal. The way permeates the whole universe. As soon as we turn towards practice, this Dharma arises. As soon as we turn to practice it, everything and everyone is practicing along with us. That's so beautiful how that works. If we practice, everyone does it at once. We never get out of the way. Yes, we do get in our way. But we're never out of the way. But we sure do get in our own way. Which is still the way when we practice it. Dogen also wrote in Gakudo Yoshinshu, which is an instruction manual for monastics and guidelines for practicing the way. He writes, practitioners of the way must first all have faith in the way. Those who have faith in the Buddha way must believe that one is free from delusive desires, upside-down ways of seeing things, and excesses or deficiencies and mistakes. Already, from the beginning, one is already free. That's the basis of our practice. Although we're already in the way, we are deluded and we miss the way. It's strange, but that seems to be the reality. For every being we see or cannot see, it is just like this. We are in the way from beginningless beginning. And yet, because we have this ignorance that we're deluded human beings to the endless end, practicing Buddha. So our practice is not to eliminate ignorance, but to see, become aware of the fact, and let it go. That's all. Can't eliminate it. Just become aware of the fact and let it go. Do not be pulled by delusions. Then we really become one, Namu, with the Buddha way, this wondrous Dharma. And even though we are inherently given wondrous Dharma, we do not know it. But the fact that we do not know it is an aspect of the wondrous Dharma. If we could understand or know it, it would not be wondrous. We can't know it. It's wondrous. So we get filled with doubts about what we're doing. Are we doing it right? Is there really enlightenment? our practice is to let go of this sort of doubt and sit on the basis of the wondrous Dharma, the reality, including delusions, including ignorance. That's our endless vow. That can be our endless vow. And if we practice this way, then each activity, moment to moment, is the perfect manifestation of the Buddha way. That's how I understand facing and walking in a direction to put all our good energy into practice, to practice the way wholeheartedly. So we have a new year coming on. I don't know what you're going to do after this, but what we'll do after this is we'll end with the Fusatsu, this part of the ceremony, taking refuge in the three treasures. And then we'll sit for a few minutes quietly, get set up, and we'll put some incense boxes out. And as you're sitting, think about a vow, or maybe you already have, a direction you would like to face. It may not be fully formed, that's okay. Just hold a sense of that direction and hold that vow close to you. Be inside of it. That's what gives it power. When we hold it closely, then it's really coming from a genuine place, right? And something changes. The body gets it. And we wake down, not up. We wake down. We feel what we're intending and let our body feel it too. So it wakes down. And this vow is deeply personal. It's your business. Some people want to say, let me tell you what I vowed. I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to know. It's your vow. It's your commitment. It's yours. And we have to be able to turn to it. It has to be something we can actually turn to in a moment. It's like, oh yeah, that's my vow. That's my vow. So it has to be challenging, a bit challenging, but workable. Not something we're like, oh, that vow, you know, I can't face it. Something that speaks the truth to you, personal and grounded. That it has to be able to manifest in real moments every day and be able to turn to it and guide us when we meet an impasse. Arouse it when we fall asleep. Oh yeah, I said it was, this was my vow. I gotta, you know, get my compass again. We vow because it's difficult. A vow binds us. Vows can change. We all know that. How many people have made vows that have changed? So it's not binding in that way, but we're letting it bind us in a way. We're connecting with it deeply. Something we won't forget. And it has to be practiced and returned to be renewed again, made fresh. I remember Yukon. I said, it was this time last year. I said, Yukon, we're doing Fusatsu tonight. And he went, ah. Make fresh. Make fresh. Thank you. To live within a vow is to live without regret. And it's the living vow rather than it's living the vow rather than its fulfillment, just living it. I vow to, that's yours. So may not have a fixed goal. Not like I vow to and then get to somewhere. It's open. It could be very open. That's something we could practice again and again. There's no expectation. It works with time, but there's no timeline. It's vast and open in accord with your circumstances. So we'll sit so we can just make contact with something. And maybe it's, I vow, and I don't know yet, but I'll work on it. I'll do it tonight. Do it. And you can just vow that. I'll make a vow. So we are among some of the very few protecting and guarding vows, guarding the silence and stillness to make one, to hear ourselves say it. And actually, stillness and silence is in the threat of being lost. It's a precious thing. And only, there's certain things that are only revealed in stillness and silence. That's how precious it is. It's only revealed when we get still and silent. And we can carry this into the new year, this fresh beginning. So, give life to that voice. Find an expression. And there'll be, so the powdered incense, it's this is identifying with that vow. You touch a little bit to your forehead, and there's a burning charcoal, and you just sprinkle a little on that. Don't go too heavy, because there's a lot of us, and we can get a little smoked out here. There's no windows, so you do some. Yeah. Let's see if I covered everything. Yeah, your happiness is everyone's happiness. It's important that we all find peace. And I'm going to do a little something different tonight, because I think we need to call forth the guardians and protectors of our vows, just like we said the names of the Buddha. So we're going to have a drum come in, and maybe Kian and Ishin, you can start off the line, and there'll be different incense boxes. Just follow them, and we'll just, whoever wants to can come up, and we'll just do it in the midst of a drum going to call these protectors and guardians forward for our vows, all of us, and for all the people who are making these vows tonight, and protect the goodness, protect our skillfulness, which is hard.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.